Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I hate to do this, but I got to share a story with you from the New York Post about how much plastic you're eating. That's right, plastic. Recent research suggests that you consume about 5 grams of small plastic particles every week, which is about the weight of your credit card. The plastic particles make their way into the human food chain from packaging waste entering the body through sea salt, seafood, and even drinking water. Scientists at the Medical University of Vienna explained these are called nanoplastics, which are less than 0.001 millimeters in size, and microplastics, so those are nanoplastics, and microplastics, which span 0.0001 to 5 millimeters. They have the ability to change your gut microbiome composition. That sounds great, doesn't it? And this was a study that was published in the peer-reviewed journal Exposure and Health. Basically, these tiny plastics are wreaking havoc on your gut. The changes in the gastrointestinal tract from plastic are linked to metabolic diseases like obesity, diabetes, chronic liver disease. While Medical University of Vienna researchers are studying the impacts of that nano and microplastics have on the body, they also discovered how these tiny plastics weasel their way into your gut tissue. When in the gut, the plastic particles trigger an immune response and activate inflammation, with mounting evidence suggesting that nanoplastics specifically trigger chemical pathways involved in the formation of cancer. I told you I hated to bring you this news, but I mean, forewarned is forearmed, right? Maybe you can adjust your diet. I'm not sure how to go about doing that. Maybe to go more organic. We'll see. The article says drinking the recommended amount of water, 1.5 to 2 liters daily, through plastic bottles alone will introduce 90,000 plastic particles per year into your body, according to a study referenced in the review. And how often do you drink water out of a plastic bottle? I do, you do, everybody does. So if you're drinking water out of a plastic bottle, this says you're getting some of this plastic in you. Drinking tap water doesn't solve the problem either, the article says. Those who drank the same amount of water from the tap ingested about 40,000 plastic particles each year. According to the study, the effects on health of plastics may be irreversible, and that this is a risk that future generations must brace for. The authors concede plastics are irreplaceable in daily life. So while it's seemingly impossible to escape ingesting nano and microplastics, one of the co-authors said, it's more harmful to people with chronic illness. A healthy gut is more likely to ward off the health risk, but local changes in the gastrointestinal tract, such as those present in chronic disease or even negative stress, could make them susceptible to the harmful effects of microplastics. I know it's a terrible thing, but you should be aware of it. And maybe there's some workaround. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'll start drinking bottled water out of glass bottles. Maybe that's the solution. I don't know. But I was displeased when I saw this article, but I knew you'd want to know about it, so there it is. And you can read about it on the show Twitter feed, which is at P Madrid Show. If you go there, or just go to the show page, relevantradio.com, you can, relevantradio.com/Patrick, you can access it there. Mariana will get it posted for you. Let's go to Las Vegas now and talk to Christy. Good morning, Christy.
Morning, Patrick. I just was wondering if you could recommend a book for people who are struggling with desolation.
It's hard for me to hear you. Are you on speakerphone? Your voice is a bit muffled.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Much better. So just a quick timeout, everybody. When you call, don't be on speakerphone or Bluetooth or anything, because it just really makes it hard to hear. So phone up to your mouth is always best. Okay, Christy, let's proceed. So you asked me for a book recommendation for what?
Yes, I was hoping you could recommend a book for people who are struggling with desolation. For me, it started with, I got very, very sick and just was thrown out of my, for an extended period of time, and was thrown out of my usual routine of prayer and attending Mass daily, right? And I was just, for me, it isn't a sense of that God doesn't love me or a sense of feeling alone or anything like that. It's just, I don't feel the urgency. I don't feel the call to prayer that I used to. And I was very relieved to find out that it was called desolation, that it was a thing and that other people have gone through it. It's more of a feeling of apathy and not feeling called to prayer. And I was particularly astounded when a girlfriend of mine who was very devout in her faith told me that she was going through the same thing right now. And I don't know if this is because there's a lot of evil in the world right now, but I was just hoping you could recommend a book.
I can. I'll recommend three to you that come to mind. Before I do that, though, I just want to point out that this may not be desolation. It could be an illness of the soul called acedia. And the way you're describing it sounds, it's more like acedia than desolation. Desolation usually comes in the form, at least according to the great saints, of your desire to have union with God through prayer, meditation, contemplation. And yet there's no sensible consolation. So you, even though you are drawn to prayer and you do pray and you are making an effort in that regard, unlike before, where you would receive sensible consolations, you don't receive those. Sometimes this is referred to as aridity, and I'm talking here about desolation. So more commonly, desolation is something that is not associated with a kind of lassitude or listlessness, where you just don't feel drawn to prayer. That is a sign that this very well may be acedia, okay? So that is a kind of sloth, and you know that sloth is one of the seven deadly sins. So if you're feeling apathetic, if you're feeling sort of a kind of listlessness about prayer or God, my guess, I'm not an expert, but my guess is that sounds more like acedia, which is a fault that you need to work to correct. Ask God's grace to correct it for you, but it's something that you would need to overcome. As opposed to desolation, which is something that God intends for you to go through, the dark night of the soul, as St. John of the Cross describes it. St. Mother Teresa, she wrote about how for maybe 40 years up to the time of the end of her life, she went through a kind of desolation where she prayed and she prayed and she prayed and she was faithful and she went to Mass and she did her adoration and said her prayers and all the things that she continued to do, and yet she didn't have any sensible consolation. She felt as though maybe God wasn't even listening to her, and yet she persisted. So that would be an example of desolation or aridity, but what you're describing sounds more like acedia. So let me recommend three books. You have your pencil handy?
I do.
Okay. So the first one I'd recommend is called Spiritual Theology, and that's by Father Jordan Ammon. Kind of sounds like the candy that you would buy at the theater when you go see a movie, but it's different. A-U-M-A-N-N. And there is a whole section on this topic in that book. The second book is called Arise from Darkness, and that's by the late, great Father Benedict Groeschel, G-R-O-E-S-C-H-E-L is his last name. And the subtitle really sort of explains it. Arise from Darkness, What to Do When Life Doesn't Make Sense. And it gets into some of these very issues that you're describing, challenges when it comes to prayer and things of that nature. And then the third book is by Dr. Peter Kraft, and it's called Making Sense Out of Suffering. And in that book, he also delves into some of these very same issues. Not so much acedia, but he does delve into difficulty with prayer and aridity and desolation. Those would be three good books to start with.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Like I said, I was just very surprised by this, and I do feel more temptation putting prayer off to do mundane things like housework, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully these will help me. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Christy. Thank you. I'm sure that if I were to do a bit of digging, I might be able to find some good articles on this topic. Acedia is a not often discussed phenomenon, but I think many people do experience it. So some people pronounce it Acedia, maybe for the Latinists among us, but it is it's a reality, and it's maybe you might say perhaps it could be understood as something like on the opposite side of the coin of scrupulosity, where in the case of scrupulosity, it often takes the form of people greatly exaggerating or magnifying beyond reality the gravity of something and perceiving it to be a sin when it's really not, or perceiving it to be a terrible sin when it's really maybe a minor sin or a minor imperfection. So in one way, the soul can be drawn toward the excess of being overly scrupulous, overly attentive. Not that one could be overly attentive in prayer, I don't mean it that way, but overly fixated or obsessed with the spiritual life. That would be one extreme to avoid. The other extreme, seems to me, would be acedia, where that kind of lassitude, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, the sloth, the just a general sense of malaise, you know, I really don't feel like praying, so I'm not going to pray. I really don't feel like going to church. I'll go, but I'm not going to really put anything into it. And, you know, I'll find 100 other things to do before I pray the rosary, if I pray it at all. I'm just not into it. I just don't feel like it. Yeah, I love God, but I don't know why. I just can't seem to really get it in gear. That's acedia. And that's an extreme in the other direction. So this is where a book like Spiritual Theology can be beneficial, because it really does dissect some of these realities that most of us in one way or another are going to go through these things. So when you can spot the warning signs and know what action to take, you're in a much better situation. Let's go now to Lynn, waiting patiently in Milwaukee. Good morning, Lynn.
Hi there. I have a situation where my ex-husband passed away just prior to COVID lockdown, and people were not gathered together at that time, so his body was cremated. Okay. And we were planning to have a service of some sort as soon as we could get everyone together. Then COVID happened and we weren't able to get together. Now this summer we're having a reunion and we will have like 50 people there. And we're having a gathering on behalf of my ex-husband. And of those 50 people, maybe 10 are Catholic, not a lot of Catholic people. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering if there's such a thing that we could have ask a priest to do some sort of a prayer service or something like that at that reunion.
You could, certainly. I think the very best thing you could do, Lynn, and by the way, my condolences for the loss of your ex-husband. I presume the two of you were not together when he died?
No.
I don't mean physically in the same room. What I mean is that you had divorced?
No. We had divorced, and I have not remarried then, but we were good friends anyway.
I see.
And close. I mean, he was a good guy. So, and he was a Catholic person who was not a churchgoer at the end, but had visited with a priest a couple times before he died. So his faith was important, but it had gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit in his older age.
I hope he was able to recover it. And perhaps in his meetings with the priest, he maybe came back to the church. He went to confession, perhaps. Did he ever tell you whether
he
went
to
confession? Okay.
Yes,
well, that's
he did.
Beautiful.
He did.
That's a yeah, very encouraging thing, and no doubt you can draw a lot of consolation from that. So to answer your question, Lynn, yes, you can ask the priest to lead the group in a prayer. My advice, though, would be to have a massive Christian burial celebrated for the repose of his soul. If you haven't already done that, I would do that. And maybe you could even, there are plenty of religious orders and monasteries and such where you can offer a stipend, and they will say a mass each day for 30 days. They call that the Gregorian masses. And that's one form of it, where you can have a mass celebrated for the repose of his soul every day for 30 days. But okay, there's no reason why the extended family couldn't be at mass. That might be something very eye-opening for them. So I would start, if I were in your situation, by asking the priest, would he celebrate mass? And then let everybody know, hey, as part of our get-together at such and such a time, we're going to have mass. Now, if that's not feasible for whatever reason, you can certainly ask the priest to lead a prayer service of some sort. But the ideal, it seems to me, would be to have a mass celebrated.
So the best thing is to have it at church. And then the second best, if you would come to the gathering when people are all together.
Well, yes, but you could also have mass celebrated. Let's say the gathering is going to be in your home. The priest could celebrate mass in your home. So that's another thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, now maybe some of the people might be willing to attend mass and observe those who aren't Catholic, but they might not be willing to go to a Catholic church. So this way the mass comes to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, that's good. That's a good advice. And I'll, I didn't know if it was, you know, an issue that we, you know, it was too late. Is there such a thing as too late, I guess?
No, it's not too late in the sense that, well, let me put it this way, Lynn. If your husband died in the state of grace, and let's hope that he did, and the signs are that he probably did, then he might be in heaven by now. He might be in purgatory by now. But since we don't know, the assumption is that he's still in purgatory. And that's just an assumption. But it's a good one to work on, and we would say, based on that assumption, we're going to keep praying for people because they could still be in need of our prayers. So it's never too late to pray for somebody who has died. That's a good point. Thank you. I think we can get to David quickly in Hammond, Indiana. Good morning, David.
Hi. My question, Patrick, is, I know in the Bible Jesus performed many miracles, and those were generally at healing people. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing in there that says that Jesus, someone came to him and said, you know, could you give me 1,000 gold pieces and say 1,000 silver pieces so I could get help the betterment of mankind by, you know, if someone's in jail because of debt or because they did not repay, they did not pay their taxes, I could get them out of jail so they could be with their family that's heartbroken that their father and their husband's in jail. And there's nowhere in the Bible that says that. But then someone told me, who was not Catholic, but is still very much a Christian, but said, well, Dave, not everything got in the Bible that Jesus did. And I don't know if that's, I necessarily agree with that. I would think that would have made it in the Bible because person that would put it in the Bible would, you know, generations of people would find this interesting to read. I don't know what your words on, you know, your thoughts on that.
Well, as you say that, I'm thinking about something that St. John wrote, and he wrote this in John 21. He says, but there are also many other things which Jesus did, were every one of them to be written, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. So he sort of echoing what you're saying, or you're echoing what he said, yeah, that there are countless other things that Jesus said and did. The Gospels don't tell us what color eyes Jesus had, or how tall he was, or, you know, things of that nature. But I suppose the best way to answer that would be to say that God in his providence did not deem it necessary for us to know that. So you're right. If it were the case where somebody came up and asked Jesus to give them 1,000 gold pieces, and he did so, that would be noteworthy, no doubt about it. So that tends, to my mind, to suggest that never happened. But he did far better things than that. So when you had thousands and thousands of people who had been listening to him preach, and toward the end of the day they were very hungry, Jesus took a few loaves of bread and a couple of fish, and he multiplied them. And he fed maybe in excess of 10,000 people. So he did better things than giving gold pieces. He actually gave people what they really needed in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Was that in cooked fish, though? It wasn't cooked.
I don't know.
Right?
But, you know, some people eat sushi. So maybe they were eating bread and sushi that day, you know, and maybe they didn't cook the fish. I don't know. Anyway, Dave, I've got to run, but thanks for the interesting question. I do appreciate that. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'm coming back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show as we move briskly through the morning. You can move with me if you want to give me a call. That's the number, 888-914-9149. I will be back in just a moment right after this. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. You done good, Cyrus. You done real good.
Thanks, partner.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right. You may be saying to yourself, speaking of Cyrus, where is Cyrus? He's taking some R&R. But he put that together before he left. So it would play even in his absence. He'll be back. Don't worry. We demand our Cyrus, right? So he'll be back in due time. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Mary in Aurora, Illinois. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Good morning. Yes, my question is, my husband will be receiving his sacraments of the Eucharist and confirmation at Easter Vigil this year. It's been a long time coming, and we've been praying for it for a long time. He's always been interested. He's always had the faith, but finally making the steps towards becoming a true Catholic. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he's always full of questions, and I've been a Catholic all my life, and I don't know how to answer his question about, in the Apostles' Creed, when it talks about Jesus being crucified, died, buried, and then he's descended into hell. Mm-hmm. He wants to know why Jesus went into hell, what did he do there, and then all of a sudden on the third day, he rose again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's take it in order. What happened when Jesus died on the cross? Where did he go? So he went into the underworld that is known in Hebrew as Sheol, and in Greek, the same word in Greek would be Hades, or at least we would say it in English as Hades, and in Latin, infernum. So these were all words to describe the place where all the souls who died, those the good and those who were bad, they would go into the underworld. Now, is it literally in the world? You know, who knows? When Our Lady showed the children in Fatima an image of hell, she showed them this vision, and the ground opened up, and they were like looking down into the bowels of the earth where they saw hell. Now, maybe that's just a kind of figurative way for her to show them this, or maybe there is something to it. Who knows? We'll find out in due time. But to that spiritual abode of the dead, that's where Jesus went. So when he was dying on the cross, John chapter 19, and he says to the good thief, "Today you will be with me in paradise," he was referring to that place more specifically, that would be the place where he would go and rescue those who were good and destined to go to heaven, but who couldn't go to heaven because the gates of heaven had been closed because of the sin of Adam and Eve. So Jesus went there and rescued them. So in the Creed, when we say he descended into hell, it does not mean that he went to the hell of the damned. He didn't go to the hell where the devil is. He went to this place of tranquility and peace where the good of the Old Testament were waiting. Now, we catch a glimpse of this from Jesus himself in Luke 16, where he describes an incident involving a rich man and a very poor man, a beggar named Lazarus. And he describes how Lazarus would just hope that he could get some of the crumbs that would fall from the rich man's table, and even the dogs would lick his sores. I mean, it's kind of a gross situation that he was in. Well, he dies, the rich man dies. The rich man and Lazarus both go to Sheol, Hades, or hell in the broader sense of the word. The rich man goes to a place of fiery torment, Jesus says. The poor man, Lazarus, goes to this place of peace and tranquility. They're in the same place. They're in the same general area. But when the rich man cries out, because he sees Lazarus over there with Abraham in peace, not being punished, and he cries out and says, "Father Abraham, please send Lazarus over here with some water because I'm burning up. I could really use some water right about now." And Abraham says no. He says there's a great chasm, a great gulf that's fixed between where you are and where we are. You can't cross to our side, and we can't cross to your side. And this is Jesus explaining all of this, which is helpful because it sheds light then on where Jesus went after he died but before the resurrection. So that's where he went. And he rescued from Adam and Eve, King David, Moses, Elijah, all the prophets, everybody who was going to go to heaven. He gathered them all up with the good thief, and he brought them all to heaven. And then on the third day, he rose again. So, and that's what the word hell means in context when we say it in the creed. Does that help? There we go. Sorry about that, Mary. I asked you if that helped, and your microphone wasn't on, but it's on now.
Yes, that helps. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Any other questions that your husband has? Because I've got the time.
Not for the moment.
All right. Well, maybe if you want to recommend that he listen to this program, I can maybe help answer some other questions that might come up. And I've written a lot of articles that are available if you go to the show page. They're all free, easy to download. They're PDF documents. And if you just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and click on the links tab or the links button, you'll see the link for the articles, and you can browse through there, and maybe he might find some things in there that would be useful to him. And as I say, they're all free and free for the taking. Thanks, Mary. Let's go to Mary in Dallas, Texas now. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, Patrick. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, great. Just had a question. I was raised in that when you go before the Blessed Sacrament, you should genuflect on both knees. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that anymore, even from priests. Has that changed?
Well, keep in mind, it's just a custom. I don't mean to say just a custom, because it's a beautiful custom, but it's not obligatory. You're not sinning if you genuflect on one knee or a deep bow. I mean, I prefer genuflecting than bowing. But it's a custom, and it obtains in some places and not in others. So it certainly was prevalent in the United States, and I would assume elsewhere in the world. But I'm certain there are places in the world where Catholics never did that. So it's a regional custom, and it's beautiful. But I wouldn't be bothered by it if you don't see somebody genuflecting on both knees. For this reason, Jesus is just as much present behind the metal doors of the tabernacle as he is in the monstrance. The fact that you can see Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament in the monstrance, that's good, but it doesn't change. It's not as though Jesus is more present somehow. Or that he's more, you know, that I guess maybe more present is the best way to put it. So it's not as though genuflection on one knee is great when you can't see him, and genuflection on two knees is somehow more important when you do see him. Either one is fine, and when people genuflect on both knees, it's a way of showing added reverence, but it's not mandatory by any means. It's beautiful and good, but it's not mandatory.
Got it. All right. Thanks, Patrick.
You're welcome. Nice to talk to you. Appreciate the phone call, 888-914-9149. How about Carolyn now in Traverse City, Michigan? Hello, Carolyn.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air. I'm just waiting for you to tell me what you'd like to talk about.
Okay, I wanted to know what I should do with all these beautiful mass request cards that say that your loved one will be remembered in a mass,
mm-hmm.
because prayers have been, or money, a donation has been sent to this mm-hmm. mission.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I can't take care of all of them. My dad used to donate regularly.
Right.
But there, I have so many beautiful cards from about 10 different places, churches or missions or shrines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know if I should donate them to St. Vincent de Paul, if that's the right thing to do. I just don't feel right throwing these beautiful religious pictures away.
Understandable. Yeah, very understandable. So that's a good thing that you're generous with your donations. Here's an inside tip, by the way, Carolyn. The reason you're getting so many of these is because when you gave to one group, whoever the group was, you got on their mailing list, and chances are you continued to receive the occasional message or letter from them with another offer for this. Well, once your name is on that list, then when that list gets rented by other organizations for their mailings, then you get on their mailing list. So if you respond, or even if you don't respond, you know, once your name's and address starts circulating, you'll start getting many, many, many things in the mail that way. That's why they're coming to you, because you gave to at least one group. And that's not bad, but it's just, that's how this happens. So if you receive these, even if you're not making a donation, you're under no obligation to make a donation, but you can do a few things with these. You could shred them, and that way they would not be, you know, in any way disrespected. Pictures of Jesus and Mary or the saints. You could burn them if you have an outdoor patio barbecue or something like that. That way they would not be disrespected. You could maybe cut the front part of the card off that's got the image of Jesus, let's say, and you could donate that to the local Catholic school so that the kids have pictures that they can make use of. St. Vincent de Paul, another great example. So there are any number of groups that might be very happy to get those cards that were donated. I think if you were to cut off the second half of the card that talks about the masses are being celebrated and so on, that way the image itself is what you're giving away as a mass card. I think that might be more.
That's what I consider doing.
Yeah. That's what I do.
Yes. Okay. You've given me a lot of things to go on. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Carolyn. Nice to talk to you. How about a break? And we'll come right back with more of the Patrick Madrid, which means more of your phone calls. I want to tell you a little bit about what Communist China is doing in the metaverse, virtual reality, and I'll tell you about that. It might surprise you, might not surprise you, actually, when I tell you what they're doing in Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse. They're active in there right now. And if you go in there, you'll be able to find it, too. It's amazing. I'll tell you about that when we come back. 888-914-9149.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Those commies, they're always looking for an angle, aren't they? I am not now, nor have I ever been, a member of the Communist Party. That's me speaking, by the way. No way I'd ever be a communist. Communism is for losers. I mean that. Anyway, the Chi-Coms. Good old Rush Limbaugh. He Chi-Com was a term that was commonly used in the 60s, probably in the 50s too, but that was before my time. But good old Rush Limbaugh, he popularized the Chi-Coms. He didn't start that term, but anyway, the Chinese communists, they've already slithered into the metaverse, which is Mark Zuckerberg's playground, you know, where you have an avatar and you go into the metaverse and you can do all sorts of interesting things that are powered by virtual reality. We've talked about this before, but just caught my eye. Chinese authorities are building a communist education school in the metaverse. According to Chinese virtual reality firm Mengke, M-E-N-G-K-E, VR, The Chinese Communist Party's metaverse will run history lectures and courses and host meetings and virtual events, even let people explore virtual exhibits about communism. Yay! You'll be able to put down video games for something better, as Beijing's metaverse will include fun-filled courses such as The Great New Era, Major Achievements of the Party and the Country Since the 18th National Congress of the Communist Party of China. Doesn't that sound fun? The Code of Leadership of the Communist Party of China, that's another course offering you could take. The new metaverse is primarily being used by the Communist Party's top cadet training school, the Chinese Academy of Governance. According to the South China Morning Post, a spokesperson for Mengke VR said that it supports party-building work in a flexible and powerful way. They also said that typical VR party building, which lets people visit virtual sites, becomes rather boring. But in the metaverse, users will be able to move around and communicate with audio and 3D avatar virtual bodies while listening to narrators discussing current hot topics and knowledge like communism. I think I know what I'd like to do. If I ever get into the metaverse, and I don't suspect I ever will, but if I did, and this actually might be a reason to get involved in the metaverse, I might get a virtual bulldozer and drive into the communist metaverse. What are they going to do? Hit me with a baton? They can't hit me with a baton because it's not real. Ha ha, joke's on you guys. You think you're able to suppress me. You can't, because here's my bulldozer and I'm going to bulldoze your communist party building. And there's nothing you can do about it. I don't even know if that's possible. But maybe we should have Catholic missionaries to go into the metaverse. Because they can't, I mean, what are they going to do? Kick you out? I suppose they could kick you out, but they can't hurt you. And maybe you can distribute virtual leaflets and get a virtual megaphone and stand outside their Communist Party headquarters in the metaverse and preach the gospel. That would be interesting. Sounds like the Wild West, if you ask me. 888-914-9149. We'll go back to the phones. Let's go to Maddie now in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Maddie.
Hi, Patrick. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah. Loud and clear.
Hi. I just have a question. I have a brother-in-law who's Protestant, and he often doesn't understand devotion to Mary, and I don't always feel like I have the best answers, but he often asks if Mary was sinless. He always asks, wouldn't she have to have been born of sinless parents or how that worked? And then just, I guess, a simple way to, or a book or something that to direct him to understand devotion to Mary, because every time I try and explain, he kind of doesn't listen to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's talk about Mary's sinlessness. So that is true. Mary was preserved free from all sin from the moment of her conception, and we call this the Immaculate Conception. And just FYI, everybody, Immaculate Conception has nothing to do with how Jesus was conceived without a human father. A lot of people get confused by that. The Immaculate Conception has nothing to do with the virgin birth. Rather, the Immaculate Conception is that Mary was conceived free from all sin. When we talk about the Immaculate Conception, we're talking about her conception, which leads to the question that your friend asks you. Well, if she was immaculately conceived, if, you know, it was necessary, as some people argue, that she be free from all sin because Jesus took his human nature from her and there was no human father involved, well, then wouldn't that mean that her parents would have to be sinless because she took an immaculate human nature from them? So if that's necessary, then they would have to be sinless, but then their parents would have to have been sinless and their parents would have to be sinless. So you'd have this huge swath of sinless people from the time of Adam and Eve forward, and that obviously is impossible. That didn't happen. So the best way to explain it is not that it was necessary that Mary be sinless, but it was fitting, it was proper. And we can prove that it wasn't necessary because it wasn't necessary for her parents to be sinless in order for her to be sinless. So in the same way, it would not be necessary for her to be sinless for Jesus to be sinless. So you can maybe establish that fact that the Catholic Church teaches that there were no other immaculately conceived people prior to Mary except for Adam and Eve. They were the first two people and they were immaculately conceived. They were not conceived in the typical way because they were the beginning of humanity, but they were conceived immaculate, free from all sin. And so Our Lady received this special singular grace as a favor from God, not because of anything she did. She didn't earn it or merit it, but God gave her this grace. So it's in anticipation. She received it ahead of time, but this is something that we anticipate, and that will be when we too will be sinless when we're in heaven. So Mary is a kind of an icon of the eschaton and our sinlessness that awaits us in heaven. She received hers from the moment of her conception. So that being the case, we can say that it was appropriate and fitting, but not strictly speaking necessary. Does that clarify it a little bit?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So what about maybe some of his other questions on Mary and other topics? I like this book by Tim Staples. It's called Behold Your Mother, and it's a compendium of apologetics responses to arguments or questions about the Marian doctrines of the church. So obviously her Immaculate Conception, her perpetual virginity, her bodily assumption, these are all things that are common questions for Protestants, and they're answered very adequately, more than adequately in that book. So that's something to get. I also have a whole chapter on this topic in a book that I wrote called Why Be Catholic? 10 Answers to a Very Important Question. And the chapter is called Mamma Mia, talking about Our Lady there. And that might be another thing you could give him. I'd also recommend, as seems more and more now, people are wondering, well, what book can I give to a Protestant? I think the very best book you can give to a Protestant would be a book called Surprised by Truth. 11 converts give the biblical and historical reasons for becoming Catholic. Now, full disclosure, I edited that book, but the stories, they speak for themselves. And these converts who became Catholic, very often in their testimonies, they strongly influence other Protestants to become Catholic. So that might be a very good book to give him.
Okay. Also then on that topic, do you know of any novenas or devotions for spouses, hoping for them to maybe convert or strengthen their faith in the future?
Well, there are many novenas, of course. One that comes to mind would be Mary Undoer of Knots, and that's a time-honored novena that seems to work, you know, some amazing things, some miraculous conversions are associated with it. And although it's not specifically for that particular prayer intention, many people have prayed that novena for that prayer intention, and God has answered their prayer with miracles of conversion. You know, the same is true of the Divine Mercy Chaplet. That's associated with conversion of heart, people becoming either returning to the Lord or they become Catholic. The Miraculous Medal Devotion is another one. Our Lady, when she appeared in Rue de Bac in Paris to St. Catherine Labouré, she promised her that those who would wear the Miraculous Medal as a sign of devotion would receive many graces that God wants to give them. And the Miraculous Medal is a sign of their expectation and their trust in their love for the Lord and their devotion to Mary. So that would be another thing. You know, if you gave somebody in your life a Miraculous Medal and said, this is a sign of how Mary, the mother of Jesus, prays for you. If he or she's willing to wear it, it's not a good luck charm. It's not magic. You know, there's nothing superstitious about it. It's like your wedding ring if you're married. The ring doesn't make you married, but it's a sign that you are married. And in a similar way, wearing a sign of devotion like the Miraculous Medal, it doesn't do anything magical for you, but it's a sign of God's power and his grace and Our Lady's intercession in your life. So these are all things that you could, you know, walk into the situation.
Okay, thank you. That was very helpful.
I'm glad. Well, kudos to you for trying to do what you can to help out. I think that's great. Maybe the only thing lacking would be if you could suggest that this gentleman start listening to this program. And who knows, maybe we've heard this before, people who were not Catholic and not even thinking about becoming Catholic, and some friend suggested that they listen to the program, or they saw a bumper sticker, or they saw something on social media, they wound up listening, they wound up becoming Catholic. It happens. Thank you, Maddie. I appreciate it. Let's go to Ann now in Sacramento. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. And I think the previous caller just touched on all of what I needed to know, and that is concerning a friend who is leaving soon for Europe to help in the war effort there because he was born in Ukraine and he wants to be there for his country. And he has a commitment. I don't know whether I'll see him again. He's not Catholic, and I'm wanting to give him something to read maybe on the way and to digest and maybe consider, because if he was born a Catholic, I just need to try. But anyway, your suggestions of Surprised by Truth, I already have that.
Okay.
But I don't have the Why Be Catholic, and I think that was good. And I've also thought of taking off my Miraculous medal and giving it to him, from me to him.
I think
maybe he would do that. And so I guess you answered everything I needed to know.
Okay. Well, Anne, that's thoughtful of you to do that. Yeah, I think the book Why Be Catholic might be just the thing. And it's great that you would give him your Miraculous medal. Now, do you have a kind of a more dainty one that would be more like what a lady might wear on a chain around her neck, or is it the larger, more, you know, the more, I don't want to say more masculine, but like the Miraculous medal that I wear is large. It's not dainty. Mm-hmm. My wife wears one that's dainty. Mine is not dainty.
This isn't too dainty, but I figure that he could just put it in his pocket maybe and not wear it. Is it necessary that be around the neck?
Well, it's not necessary, but it is interesting that when Our Lady told this to St. Catherine Laboure, she told her that those, especially those who wear it as a sign of devotion and faith on a chain around their neck, that there's something special about that. And so that's how I wear it. I think most people tend to wear it that way. But it's not, you know, it's not as though, oh, sorry, it's not going to help you if you don't wear it on a chain around your neck. But it's also, I think, a lot less likely to get lost, because if it's in the pocket, it's easier to get lost than if it's on a chain around your neck.
Right. Well, I just, you know, wanted to do whatever I could to help him along, because I know that he's had some change of heart in these past years. I had sponsored him years ago to come to this country, and not so good. But lately, things are changing, and maybe it's because of his fervor for his country and his wishing to do something. Because he's a patriot, and we really admire that. And I'm just going to be praying for him. And thank you so much for taking my call. And
you're most
welcome. All you do. I love
your
program.
Welcome.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to recommend, now that Anne's gone, I'm going to recommend another book, which I love to recommend. This is by Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle, and it is her book on the Miraculous Medal. It's really good. It's called The Miraculous Medal, Stories, Prayers, and Devotions. And if your friend who's leaving to go to Ukraine, may God protect him, this is also available as a Kindle edition. So if he had the Kindle reader, the app, you know, on his phone, he doesn't have to have a Kindle device, but the app is free. And he could put the Kindle reader on his phone if he had an iPhone or an Android and then download this book. But if you wanted to give him the actual book itself, it's easily available at your local Catholic bookstore or online as well. The author's name is Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle. Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle. And the book in particular, she's written many books, all of them. I haven't read them all, but they all look quite nice. But the one I have read and really appreciate is The Miraculous Medal, Stories, Prayers, and Devotions. So for someone who's not familiar with the Miraculous Medal devotion, that would be a great introduction to it. Okay, well, we have another break coming, but we also have a full hour on the other side of that. So if you've been ready to call, but you haven't called yet, call now, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. If you want to send me an email, just go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and you can click on the contact button, and there you'll see the link to send me an email. And as I always say, it comes directly to me. I read it, I appreciate it, and I just might be able to read it on the air. So that's another easy way to reach me. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.